Senator King on the Great American Outdoors Act and other current events. Recreation in Maine is a $3 billion industry that supports tens of thousands of jobs. And a big part of our state's recreation landscape are its national lands, including Acadia National Park, the Appalachian Trail, and now Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Senator Angus King joins us to discuss the Great American Outdoors Act, which aims to restore, update, and protect the nation's public lands. Joining the senator will be the CEO and president of Friends of Acadia, and we'll hear from one of the producers of the PBS documentary, The National Parks, America's Best Idea, which can be streamed now free of charge. We'll also ask Senator King about current events in the nation, from the Black Lives Matter movement to the latest on the COVID pandemic. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. For Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Just about a half hour ago, the U.S. Senate passed the Great American Outdoors Act. It's been called the most significant public lands and conservation project in generations. Maine's Senator Angus King was one of the co-sponsors and a driving force behind the legislation, and he is one of our guests today. Also on the line with us, David McDonald, who is president and CEO of Friends of Acadia. A little later in the show, we'll speak with award-winning author and documentary filmmaker Dayton Duncan, who won two Emmys for his work on The National Parks and America's Best Idea, which first aired 9 years ago, but you can now stream for free from PBS. David McDonald, Senator King, welcome back to Maine Calling, and congratulations.
Thanks,
Thank
Jennifer.
You so much, Jennifer.
The vote was 73 to 25, and I'll tell you, it's hard to get that kind of vote on what time it is around here. So to get a overwhelming bipartisan majority like that on this very important piece of legislation is it just feels great. And now we've got to move in the House. We have sponsors over there. We're already working with them. The president has agreed to sign the bill once we get it to him. So this is a big step today.
As always, we want to hear from you in the audience. How do you feel about a boost in funding for Maine's national parks and public lands? What questions do you have for Senator King? You can send a brief, please brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Senator King, as you just alluded to, this is a major piece of legislation. I understand it will provide $1.9 billion a year for 5 years to address the maintenance backlog at national parks and lands, as well as a permanent fund for the Land and Water Conservation Fund, which has been perennially underfunded. You and many others have been calling this for years. Why now? Why is this the moment for bipartisan support for the national parks?
Well, sometimes the stars align, Jennifer, and in this case, everybody wanted. I think there was a general feeling, and this has been, you know, I've been working on the Restore Our Parks Act for 4 years with Rob Portman of Ohio and Mark Warner of Virginia, and particularly Lamar Alexander of Tennessee. So it started out as a bipartisan project. And I think, I don't know, maybe Mitch McConnell just wanted to see something positive come out, because this is one that there's just a lot of support for. It goes back for many years. And I should mention where the money's coming from. It's coming from the royalties that the federal government gets for energy extraction on public lands. In other words, offshore drilling, or drilling on public lands, coal mining. This idea goes back to the 60s. In 1964, the Land and Water Conservation Fund was created, and the idea was a kind of symmetrical one. We're using the people of America own this property, and we're going to use the proceeds for the use of the property to expand access to the outdoors and recreation for the American people. The problem was it created a fund, but Congress would raid it every year. It's only been fully funded twice in all the years since 1964. What happened today is permanent funding, no more annual appropriations, no more ability of Congress to grab the money and use it for something else. It'll be $900 million a year for the Land and Water Conservation Fund. And then the excess over that, 50% of that will go to the Restore Our Parks Act. So that's where the money comes from. And it's a real victory for the American people. And we can talk about Acadia. There's about a $60 million maintenance backlog just at Acadia. And this is true across the country. So we're really going to take a big whack out of those that backlog. And we're paying off a debt, Jennifer. This is a debt. This is something, when you have deferred maintenance, it's like money owed. And you're going to have to take care of it eventually. And as of today, we're on our way to doing just that.
Senator King, I do want to ask David about Acadia, but before I do that, I want to ask you, if this money is tied to oil drilling, coal mining, et cetera, does that mean that if coal mining or oil drilling no longer happens in the future on public lands, there will be no money for national parks?
That's right. That's right. And that's a problem, you know, that we'll confront at the time. And frankly, as far as I'm concerned, it's not a bad problem. But I don't think that's going to happen in the immediate future. And in the meantime, we're going to be allocating those funds as they were intended to be allocated, you know, 60 years ago.
All right. David, as the senator mentioned, I understand Acadia has a maintenance backlog of more than $60 million. How much does the park expect to receive from this funding? And what kind of projects will that money go towards?
Thank you, Jennifer. Well, first, I just do want to offer my thanks and kudos to the senator for your leadership and your persistence on this effort. It really is a remarkable show of bipartisan support, but I know that did not come easy, so we appreciate the work you've done with your colleagues for the last 4 years. Acadia's backlog, it represents both things that you would see, Jennifer, if you came to the park next week, and it's things that are hidden. You know, it's trails, it's motor roads, it's carriage roads. It's those beautiful stone bridges you see over the roads, but it's also invisible things like septic systems, water tanks, culverts, retaining walls that are behind the carriage roads, a maintenance facility up at park headquarters that is literally crumbling, you know, that holds all of the park's tools and equipment. So don't get me wrong, the park staff does an absolutely stellar job on keeping up Acadia's assets. And there are, in total, of all the buildings and trails and things at Acadia, it totals about $1 billion in assets. So the fact that the backlog is $65 million, compared to a lot of other parks, that's actually relatively low, because we've got a park staff that's really thrifty and economical and smart about where they put their money. But they will have to compete on an annual basis, on a grant basis, to attract some of this funding. And the great thing is that Acadia also has a strong history of private philanthropic support. So Friends of Acadia's job is to try to help strengthen their application by offering private matching dollars that will sort of boost their score and increase the likelihood that we'll attract some of this important federal funding that will come from this bill.
All right. Well, Senator King,
Jennifer, I've suggested in the committee numerous times that I thought the proper way to allocate this money to the national parks was by in alphabetical order. But I haven't gotten any many takers, especially the folks that have Zion.
At Zion, that's right.
Yeah, but, you know, it works for me. Go ahead, Jennifer.
I was just going to ask, what about other places in Maine? Will this fund Katahdin Woods and Waters, the Appalachian Trail, or even the St. Croix Island National Historic Site?
It could, and it's those sites would be eligible. When we first started working on this, it was only for the national parks. And then we realized that there was a lot of this similar problem on public lands, Bureau of Public Lands, fisheries and wildlife, places like Katahdin Woods and Waters and St. Croix. So they'll have to, you know, they're going to, it'll be a kind of priority basis, and that's sort of the next step in this process. But the good news is that the money's available now, or it will be. Hopefully, we got to get it through the House and get it signed. But this was a big step here today.
Sure. And you mentioned that President Trump has tweeted that he will sign this. A lot of people don't believe President Trump to be a big fan of public lands. He said other things that are against, for example, the expansion of some of the national monuments in the U.S. Why do you think he's supporting this?
Well, I just got off a call with the small group of sponsors, and Mitch McConnell and Steve Daines and Cory Gardner, three Republican senators, went to the White House, met with the president. They took some beautiful photographs of National Parks Glacier and some of the parks out west. And they talked to him for about an hour, and they said at the end of the conversation, he leaned back and crossed his arms over his chest and said, if you guys can get this bill to my desk, I'll sign it. So, you know, I'm not quibbling. I'm not looking a gift horse in the mouth. If it's going to get done, then whatever works.
So, Jennifer, not to be cynical an exciting day for you, but is there any coincidence that this is an election year?
That may have entered into it, you know. But again, like I say, I'm not going to look a gift horse in the mouth. Whatever factors came together to make this happen. That's the important thing is, you know, this is a big deal today. But to me, what's really special about this is going to benefit generations in the future in America. They're not going to know, you know, Angus King or Mark Warner or Omar Alexander. You know, they're not going to know who did this. They're just going to know that they get to hike a beautiful trail along the coast in Maine, or spend a night at Katahdin Woods and Waters, or you know, camp out on a mesa in Utah. They're going to know that somebody did something to make this available to them. That's what's important to me. And it's one of the few things we can do around here that's more or less permanent. Bills can be amended and changed, but this is something that, you know, is going to be here for generations. And I think as our population grows, these outdoor experiences are going to become more and more important.
David?
Yeah, I was just going to add, Jennifer, I do think that the pandemic and what we've been through the last few months has really strengthened our collective sense of the importance of nature and being outdoors for physical health, mental health, emotional health. I think this resonates more than ever now. I also think, in a way, this is a jobs bill. This boosts the economy of Maine and the nation in significant ways, whether it's the national parks and all the visitors they draw, or whether it's just making more livable and attractive communities through the Land and Water Conservation Fund. So I do believe that both parties and the president see this as an economic booster at a critical time.
Well, and let's talk about that, Senator King. I want to talk about the land and water conservation piece. What does that do?
It's everything from conservation easements to ball fields. It's outdoor recreation funding for projects all over the country. I don't know how many I should know. I don't know how many there are in Maine, but they're scattered all over the place. There are projects that have helped communities and states, and it's separate from the parks. And usually it's made in the form of grants to states and localities. So it's, like I say, it could be a trail along a river in Maine between two communities, or it could be a ball field, or something that allows kids to get outside and enjoy the out-of-doors. I wanted to mention, we were talking about how the pandemic has spurred interest in the out-of-doors. Here's an interesting anecdote. I was talking to a friend of mine who's an RV dealer last week, and he told me he's had the biggest month in the last 20 years. So apparently people really do want to get outside, and they think an RV may be a way to do it because it doesn't involve airplanes or public transportation. So I just thought that was interesting. I wouldn't have guessed that, but he said it's just been crazy.
That is really interesting. And David, do we know if the Land and Water Conservation Fund will help Acadia?
It most certainly will. Yeah, the beauty of this concept that Senator King has described that's over 50 years old is when it was created, it created both a federal pot of money and what they call stateside. So some of the money goes to Acadia. It helps acquire lands that are within the park's boundary that help round out Acadia National Park. But as the senator said, there's a separate track that could send money to the town of Biddeford to help, you know, acquire open space for a soccer field. So it really addresses both local, statewide. Land and Water Conservation Fund helps fuel the Forest Legacy Fund, which helps us preserve large tracts of working forest up in the North Woods. So it really covers the gamut of conservation values throughout the state of Maine. But we at Acadia are particularly pleased that it helps the park have the ability to pick up a strategic parcel within its boundary when a willing seller comes forward and says, hey, I'm ready to sell this to the park. It's awfully awkward when the park says, sorry, we don't have any money to take advantage of that opportunity. So it will definitely help in that regard.
Senator King, I'd like to ask you about a few other things while I have you here. First, police reform legislation. Just this morning, the Republicans unveiled their police reform bill. Have you had a chance to look at it, and can you support it?
I have not. I have heard it described. My concern is that what I'm hearing is that it's more suggestive than actually taking on some of these issues head on. What I'm hoping might happen, Jennifer, is that, as you know, there's a Democratic bill that was introduced by Kamala Harris and Cory Booker, and the Republican bill was introduced by Tim Scott. Interesting, all three of those are African Americans. I'm hoping that we can have some discussions and debate and maybe come together on a consensus bill. I don't know if that's going to be possible because these are pretty contentious issues, but and here's another important sort of news from today. My understanding is that now that we're finished with the Great American Outdoors Act, there are going to be one or two other votes this week. But the next 2 weeks are going to be voted in the Senate are going to be devoted to policing reform. Mitch McConnell has agreed to bring, as my understanding as of a half hour ago anyway, is he's agreed to bring one or both or some combination of these bills to the floor. So right now, I think everybody's digesting what's in the two bills, and my preference would be to see some bipartisan negotiation and come to some kind of consensus. I don't know if that's going to be possible. It's a political year, as you know. This is a pretty difficult issue, but that's where it stands at the moment.
Are there elements that a police reform bill must have for you to vote yes?
Well, yeah, I think there are some. One is I think there needs to be a database of bad actors. We need to know, there has to be a way of knowing who, often in these cases, it's now starting to appear that the police officers who are being violent have a record of doing that, that it's not just a single incident. I think that's an important piece. There's got to be some kind of accountability. I think this business about chokeholds, there has to be some limitation on that. This is a tough issue because, you know, I know all kinds of police in Maine. I've spent 8 years practically living with the state police, and I know what good people they are, and I know they're trying to keep order. But I also know that there is a problem nationwide of gross racial disparities in these kinds of situations. I don't think a white person can really appreciate what it's like to be pulled over for nothing and be fearful of, you know, that what might happen. And that, you know, it just keeps happening. So I'm not prepared to list the specific items, but I think we do need to address some of these things and try to find something that threads the needle, but moves the needle in terms of unacceptable violence toward African Americans, particularly.
Senator, you mentioned that you believe the Senate will probably spend the next couple of weeks talking about police reform. What about pandemic relief? I've read that Mitch McConnell is suggesting late July. Is that what you're hearing, and is that acceptable to you?
That's what I'm hearing, and it's not acceptable. It's not. There's the biggest missing piece right now, Jennifer, is assistance to the states and the communities. You know, in Maine, we're already facing layoffs and furloughs. in communities across the state. I had a Zoom call last week with public officials in Bangor and also with public officials from the Portland area. We don't have the luxury in the state or at the town level of borrowing money to do our operations. The budget has to be balanced. And so if you've got a loss of revenues, which is what's happening because of the COVID, sales taxes are down, gas taxes are down, income taxes are down, the state or the community only has two choices: raise taxes or severely cut programs. And usually, particularly in the towns, that means people. And it would be ironic and damaging if we were in the middle of this coronavirus cutting first responders, cutting police, fire, and also there'll be enormous effects on education. So that's the missing piece. And Mitch McConnell has been very resistant to that. And I'm pretty frustrated by it. This isn't a blue state or a red state thing. The leader of the Governors Association is a Republican governor, Larry Hogan, in Maryland. So this is something that really needs to be addressed. And waiting until late July, the problem with that is our fiscal year, on I think it's 48 of the 50 states, ends at the end of June. We've got to start the new fiscal year, and they're going to have to start making some pretty drastic decisions, cutting education aid, cutting support to the university, all those kinds of things that really help our citizens, without knowing what the federal government is going to do. We may or may not do something. I frankly think we ought to go on a 6-day a week schedule and do both police reform and some kind of COVID relief in the meantime. By the way, there's one bill that we could do tomorrow, a bipartisan bill. I'm on it with Dan Sullivan of Alaska. In the big CARES Act that passed, remember, a month or 6 weeks ago, there was a hunk of money for the states. The problem was it had strings on it that said you can use this money for additional COVID-related expenditures, but you can't use it to fill the hole of COVID-related revenue losses. If we could just eliminate that limitation, that would be a huge help to the states in a very short time. And that bill's ready to go. We could process that bill in a couple of days. And then we could talk in July about further aid and a larger package and all of those issues. So there is a way it could be done, but Senator McConnell doesn't seem to want to do it. And your listeners ought to know that the majority leader of the U.S. Senate has total 100% dictatorial power over what comes to the floor of the Senate. If it's something he wants to consider or wants voted on, it comes up. If it isn't, it doesn't come up. There are like 350 bills that the House has passed that are sitting on his desk. I told somebody the other day he has power that would make Julius Caesar blush. And so if he decides to bring it up, we can do it. If he doesn't, there's no mechanism in the Senate to force the consideration of a particular issue. And it's very frustrating. It's not the way it's supposed to work. And I'm working behind the scenes on some possibilities of changing some of those rules. But that's the deal that we're working on right now.
Senator King, when we come back from a break, I want to ask you about Afghanistan. Also, we're going to take listener questions. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Knox, offering property investors and homeowners planning to move the option of converting their home to an income-producing investment. Learn more at knoxincome.com. Androscoggin Home Healthcare and Hospice, providing home care, hospice, and palliative care, and now telehealth, androscoggin.org. And the University of Maine at Augusta, committed to providing a quality, affordable education online and in the classroom, uma.edu.
Welcome to Maine Public's This Is My Maine.
Since I've lived here my whole life, it's like all of my happiest memories are here. So it never really feels like home anywhere else, like if I go anywhere else. So when I come back to Maine, it's like this feeling of security because that's what I know, and like all my family's here, and I just love it so much. So as I grew up, I loved animals more and more, and not only pets, but wildlife, and I was so surprised to find out that Maine has so many locations where you can see wildlife. And some of the trails, you'll see unexpected things like moose and porcupines, like you never know. I'm Violet, this is Lula. We're from Portland, and this is our Maine.
This is My Maine is brought to you through the support of Eaton Peabody, the Maine Community Foundation, and the generous support of members like you. Thank you. Go to mainepublic.org to experience more of Maine Public's celebration of Maine's first 200 years. Happy birthday, Maine.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Our guest today, U.S. Senator Angus King and David McDonald with Friends of Acadia. We are discussing the brand new, the outdoors legislation that is been passed this morning, the Great American Outdoors Act. We're also discussing some other issues of national importance right now. Senator King, before we go to our listeners, I want to ask you about Afghanistan. You have been critical of a plan to pull U.S. troops out of Afghanistan by Election Day. You sent a letter to the Director of National Intelligence, John Ratcliffe. What's your problem with this? We've been in Afghanistan for nearly 20 years now.
Well, my problem is, and listen, I would love to get out of Afghanistan. My problem is, and you use the word plan, I just want to know what the plan is. And the refrain around here for years is that when we make these kinds of decisions, they should be conditions-based, not calendar-based. In other words, it should be based upon what's going on the ground, and have we achieved what it was that we tried to achieve. And if you say to the Taliban, we're going to pull out by Election Day, it's just logical. And by the way, Barack Obama made the same mistake in Iraq. You give a date, and then the adversary says, well, okay, you know, we'll just take a few months off, and we're going to take over when that date comes. There's an old saying about the Taliban that their motto is, you have the watches, but we have the time. And the worry is that we're going to be right back where we were in 2001 with the Taliban more or less in charge. All the effort that's gone in the last 19 years is for naught. The government falls apart. Women lose all the gains that they've made. When we went into Afghanistan, there were something like 500 women in school, period, in the whole country. And now it's a million or 800,000, some, you know, a totally change in the status of women. The Taliban is friendly to Al-Qaeda, which is still around. ISIS is active in Afghanistan. So I just want to be sure that we know what we're doing and that we're not abandoning allies, because that's what we did in Syria. And Winston Churchill said the only thing worse than fighting with your allies is fighting without allies. And if we just walk away, we're leaving the Afghan government, and we're leaving, and NATO has a bunch of troops and investment in Afghanistan. And it's not in the national interest, it seems to me, for America to be telling the rest of the world, you can't count on us. Now, this doesn't mean that there can't be a gradual withdrawal that makes sense. And it may make sense by Election Day, but the administration made an agreement with the Taliban in February that had certain benchmarks. And if they're not met and we leave anyway, then our credibility is gone, and we may end up with another terrorism situation on our hands that would require another very significant intervention. We had as many as 100,000 troops over there. We now have 8,000, or I think 8,600. And I just want to know what the administration's plan is, rather than, you know, we're going to make it based on the political calendar. That's not a good way to make decisions.
We'll go to Robert, who's calling from Parsonsfield. Hi, Robert. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. Senator King, I really appreciate what you've done for our state. I've been following your career for a very long time. First of all, my questions are about legislation. And you kind of teased us before with your remarks about what could be done about the uncontrolled power of the Senate Majority Leader. I don't know if you're prepared to say any more about that, but I wonder if anything can really be done. And secondly, I love what you did for the Disclosure Act all those years ago. I wonder if that has any possibility of becoming legislation. Thank you.
Well, I'm going to stay on that issue because I think, you know, the American public can make good decisions if they have good information. And part of the information about our elections is who's contributing. I don't think people should be able to contribute to campaigns and not have people know who they are. And we have this sort of dual system where if you give $100 to my campaign, I have to list your name, address, and occupation. But if you do it through one of these dark money, fake organizations, you can give $1 million and nobody ever knows who you are. I don't think that's right. You can't go to a Maine town meeting with a bag over your head. People want to know who it is that's trying to influence them. So I'm going to stay on that. As far as the rules about the majority leader, the proposal that I'm preparing to push in the Rules Committee is that if a bill comes out of a committee with a bipartisan, some kind of supermajority, then it automatically has a path to the floor, whether the majority leader likes it or not. And I think it's a matter of taking back some power to the committees that's been usurped by the leaders and both sides, by the way. This isn't just Mitch McConnell. Harry Reid was a pretty tough guy himself. There ought to be more ability for us, for the members, to have some control over what goes to the floor. So that's what I'm working on the Rules Committee.
All right, Robert, thanks for your call. I'm going to go to Carol, who's calling from Cumberland. Hi, Carol, go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, Jennifer. Senator King, thank you so much for what you do. God bless you. It raises my hope.
Thanks.
For this. Thanks. Well, I do call your office often and say, hey, keep on doing what you're doing. My question really is hopefully a straightforward one about Mr. Trump was in our state, and when he met with the fishermen, apparently he said, we're going to remove the restrictions on the Marine memorial. I maybe not be saying the right words, but and I wondered the monument I believe it's off Cape Cod, I'm not sure, but what does he have that power? Can he do that? And what's the status of that?
Well,
I mean, it sounded like such a silly, I mean, it just made me crazy.
Well,
anyway,
the first question is, it's an open question of whether he does have that power, because that Seamount area was set aside as a national monument by President Obama. And there's no question that under something called the Antiquities Act, which was passed in 1906, presidents have the power to set aside areas of special significance. The question is, does a later president have the power to undo it? It's never been done since 1906. So this president reduced the size of a monument out west, Bears Ears, and he's done something similar here. That's going to be litigated. That's going to be something that the courts have to decide. And I think it's an open question as to whether or not a president has that power. My problem with the action was that we've got some serious problems with our fishery, particularly in lobstering, but it doesn't have anything to do with the seamounts. I mean, that was like invading Brazil after Pearl Harbor. We want a strong action, but the wrong way of going about it. There are two things really hurting our lobster industry right now. One is the pandemic has killed restaurants and, you know, those kinds of sales, which is where a lot of lobsters go. But the big deal was tariffs with the EU and China in retaliation for the tariffs that this country imposed on them. We had a growing market in China for lobsters, and it just went practically to zero when the president imposed those taxes on China. And, of course, not surprisingly, China retaliated, and one of the first things they retaliated on was lobsters. So if he wanted to help our lobster industry, doing something about those tariffs would have been much more effective and important to our folks along the coast than what he did with the seamount. Most of the benefit, not all, but most of the benefit of that will go to deep sea fishermen from Massachusetts.
Carol, thanks so much for your call. We are going to go to another quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions for Senator Angus King. We'll also speak with Dayton Duncan, one of the producers of the PBS series on the national parks. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Dean's Sweets, specializing in hand-dipped nut-free chocolates in Portland's Old Port and on Cove Street. DeansSweets.com. The Lunder Foundation, founding partner of Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Classical. And Breakwater in Portland, offering summer day camp programs for kids ages 3 to 18. Registration at enrichment.breakwaterlearning.org. On This Day in Maine's History is brought to you in partnership with the Maine Historical Society.
On June 17, 1779, roughly 700 British troops sailed up Penobscot Bay and landed in a small settlement in the Castine region. The British hoped to use the harbor as a base to attack American privateers and shipping. Atop a bluff on the peninsula, the British started building a small wood and dirt fort they named after their king, Fort George. British soldiers found little resistance among locals, some of whom were still loyal to the king, and had fled more populated, less friendly parts of revolutionary Massachusetts.
On This Day in Maine's History is made possible through the generous support of Bernstein Schur and Maine Masons, celebrating their bicentennial in Maine. Happy birthday, Maine! The Daily Maine CDC briefing on the coronavirus now has a new three-day-a-week schedule, regularly meeting on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. On these 3 days, it will normally happen at 2 o'clock each weekday afternoon, and Maine Public Radio, Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, and the Maine Public Facebook page will all bring it to you live. In addition, the briefings are archived at MainePublic.org for later on-demand viewing or listening. Just choose the television drop-down. Again, Maine's CDC briefing with Dr. Shaw and others is now normally scheduled for 2 o'clock Monday, Wednesday, and Friday afternoons, and carried here on Maine Public Radio, as well as Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, and the Maine Public Facebook page.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today, we're discussing preservation of our national parks and lands. On the line with us, David McDonald, who is president and CEO of Friends of Acadia. And joining us from his home in New Hampshire, Dayton Duncan, an award-winning writer and documentary filmmaker. He's written 13 books, including Seed of the Future, Yosemite, and the Evolution of the National Park. And he wrote and produced the National Parks, America's Best Idea, which is streaming now on PBS. He is a longtime collaborator with Ken Burns. Also with us, of course, Senator Angus King, one of the sponsors of the legislation that just passed the U.S. Senate this morning. Dayton, welcome back to Maine Calling.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I'm a friend of Acadia.
There you go. Hey, I thought that it was 9 years ago that National Parks America's Best Idea originally aired, but it was 11 years ago. I understand it's re-airing right now. How was that decision made to do this now?
Well, a number in this time where people are more homebound than normal, Ken and PBS and all of us decided to do our bit of giving people a chance to see some history. So a number of Ken's previous films have been re-airing, and we thought nothing better for this time of year than to rebroadcast and also to offer for free on streaming the National Parks film. And you're right, that's a long time ago, 2009, so maybe people who didn't get a chance to catch it the first time can, or people who want to just travel back and watch it again will get that opportunity.
As you filmed around the country, I'm sure you saw so much of the maintenance that needed to be done on America's national parks. Have you been following the legislation that just passed this morning, and is there anything you'd like to say to reflect on it?
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank Senator King for his leadership with, you know, a bipartisan effort to address these longstanding deficiencies in support of our national parks. It's an odd thing that we learned as we were making our film, which is that everybody loves the national parks, And the hardest rock to move oftentimes is the federal government. When they first passed the bill to create Hawaii Volcanoes National Park, they passed it and put up no money for, you know, for maintenance of the park, because one senator said it doesn't take any money to to keep a volcano going. And so we have these periods of time when there's always support at the grassroots level, and we go through periods of time when at the top level that's absent. And when those two things do, however, come into conjunction, it's like, you know, lightning doesn't just come from the top down. It's, you know, an action from the, you know, from the ground up as well. And it's when we see those things converge, that's when things move forward. And unfortunately, over the last 3.5 years, there has not been leadership from the administration itself. The National Park still does not have a National Park Director, nominated and by the Senate, and that's just unprecedented. And that's an indication, I think, of the current administration's view of the national parks and public lands and their importance to us. And I'm so glad that in the absence of executive action that the Congress is moving forward. There's just a lot of work that needs to be done, and hopefully this will get the final approval from the president, and it's also be good for, it's a lot of jobs to be created fixing those areas that need to be fixed.
Dayton, I want to have you hold on to the line if you would, if we have any questions about the PBS film. David McDonald, though, I want to ask you, after the Ken Burns series came out in 2009, what did that mean for Acadia National Park? Did you see a spike in visitorship?
Well, the visitorship at Acadia has been on an upward trajectory, and I certainly think that that film brought awareness to Americans about the importance of the park system, and there was a section of the film specifically on Acadia. So Acadia's visitation has practically doubled over the last 10 years. We had 3.5 million visits last year. We're one of the smaller parks in the country, so that leads to some, you know, some challenges in managing vehicles in particular. The park has set about working on a comprehensive transportation plan that starts to put forward some new solutions to that. I think it's a great problem to have. Having the parks popular and front of mind for folks, whether it's Acadia or whether it's the parks out west, I think that's a good thing in the long term. And it just underscores the need for Congress to invest in these resources, as the senator and Dayton have said. So I see it as a good thing, and particularly now that we have the resources to manage them.
Great. We'll go to Alex, who's calling from Wiscasset. Hi, Alex. Go ahead.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for taking my call. I have a two-part question for the panel today. And I've been working in the outdoor ed industry for a long time, and we basically had to shut down programming statewide. And I've been curious to see that, A, congratulations on the passing of the bill, and I'm curious to see how quickly the funds will be made available to the parks. And will those funds spur some job growth or some job opportunities for people that are in the outdoor ed industry that may look elsewhere within the to find another job? Because that's kind of where I'm at.
Senator King.
Two answers. One, as far as when the money will be available, we've still got to get this bill through the House, and the president has to sign it. And hopefully, what we're working right now, and we've been on the phone already this morning with House members, is pass the bill as is. Don't amend it. Don't change it too much or change it at all, because if it is changed, then we have to go through a separate congressional process of a conference between the houses. Then it would have to be passed again in both houses. So we're hoping they'll take it as we passed it today. And the president has already indicated he'll sign it. So that would be a much shorter process. In terms of employment, the Interior Department did an estimate that this bill would create 40,000 direct jobs and about 100,000 indirect jobs. So the combined economic effect is about 140,000, 150,000 jobs nationwide. because people are going to have to do the work that needs to be done. As David was saying, there's a lot of work that needs to be done up at Acadia. The other thing is, we haven't really talked about this, but national parks are huge economic drivers. Acadia generates between $300 and $400 million worth of spending in Maine outside of the park. People that come and spend the night, they go to restaurants, they stop in Portland. It was amazing. When I was governor, I used to go down to Kittery and greet people at the visitor center at York when they came into Maine on Memorial Day. You know, hi, I'm the governor. Welcome to Maine. And after I got a few double takes, but I often said, okay, where are you going? 80% of them said they were going to Acadia, and they thought it was about a half hour away. And I said, well, it's a little ways from here. Maybe you want to stop at Booth Bay on the way, or Wiscasset. It's a huge economic driver. And of course, this summer is so tough because of the effect of the virus on tourism and people coming into the state. But hopefully we're going to get through this and recover at least part of this summer and go on to even greater heights next year.
Alex, thanks for your call. We'll move on to Brownie. Brownie Carson calling from Harpswell. Hi, Brownie. Go ahead.
Hello, Jennifer. Hello, Senator and others. Thank you very much for taking my call. First of all, I'd like to thank you for your strong support and, in fact, your leadership on funding for Land and Water Conservation Fund, Senator. It's hugely important. I have a question for you about the Southern Utah National Monuments, Bears Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante. As you know, there is a bill that has been around for some years, but it's never garnered enough support to be enacted, America's Red Rock Wilderness Act. And with the Trump administration cutting very substantial portions of both Grand Staircase and Bears Ears out and trying to lease land there and doing a management plan that would really harm those areas, both their cultural sites and their natural resources values, I would love to ask your views on America's Red Rock Wilderness Act and what it would take for those of us in Maine who love Southern Utah to persuade you to become a co-sponsor.
Well, first, I've got to tell you, when Mary and I and the kids did our RV trip around the country right after I left, the day I left as governor, Southern Utah was one of the most spectacular places we were, Monument Valley, Moab, that whole area. The issue, Brownie, that the senators from Utah are against those projects. And there's a kind of, I don't know if I'd call it an unspoken or an overt recognition that there's some deference paid to what the local representatives think. Just as if there was a major project proposed in Maine, people would want to know, you know, what do Angus and Susan think about it? So I'm just going to be practical. I support the project, but until Mike Lee and Mitt Romney decide a project has been proposed that fits with what they view as important for Utah, I think it's going to be tough because a lot of my colleagues are going to say, if they're not for it, then, you know, let's move on. That's the practical reality.
I hear you, but of course, I'm sure you know that the Utah legislature has passed in some not current, but I believe one of the past governors signed legislation that would actually require the United States to deed back all federal lands, including the national parks, to the state of Utah. It obviously has no force and effect, but we're never going to get, certainly Mike Lee, maybe Mitt Romney could come around, I don't know, but
Brownie, thanks for your call. I'm going to move on, though, because we're really tight on time and a lot of different people want to ask questions of Senator King. Here's an email from Thomas. Senator King and Susan Collins signed a bill in February 2019 to eliminate the windfall elimination provision. That provision can cut Social Security to Maine residents by up to 50% if they've worked in public and private service. When will this bill be passed so Mainers can finally get some relief?
I've been on this bill since the day I got here. It's the right thing to do. We ought to be able to fix it. The problem is it only affects 13 states. I think it's 13. And we're just having, Susan and I have had a hard time getting our colleagues interested in it because there is some cost to the Social Security system. and we don't have enough allies, but we're going to keep at it. And I hope we're going to be able to fix it, because it's an injustice for sure. I'm well aware of the problem.
All right. I'm going to go to Mike calling from Bangor. Mike, if you could be very quick, that would be great.
Really quick question for the senator. Senator, in 2014, you endorsed Susan Collins. Will you be doing that again this year?
I'm probably going to stay out of the election this year. I'm focused on what's going on down here and on the work that's going on. I think the people of Maine can figure out how to vote without my guidance.
Mike, thanks for your question. And one last question from John in Jefferson. Go ahead, and if you could be quick, that would be great.
Okay, real quick. We all know the post office is in serious financial problem, leading back to 2006 when a law was passed to require 75 years in advance funding of retirement, which means like three generations ahead, which is ludicrous. Will Senator King lead the way to repeal that law?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I agree with you. It is ridiculous. There's no other requirement anywhere on private or public sector. It's crippled the post office, and we ought to be able to fix it. And we appropriated $10 billion in the CARES Act 6 weeks ago to be a loan to the post office to get them through the cash crunch that they're experiencing right now. The administration is holding that up, I believe, because of the president's dispute with Amazon. That should not be the issue. We ought to put the post office on and they would be on a sound financial basis without that provision. So the short answer is yes.
All right. Dayton Duncan, before we let you go, I want to ask you, how can someone watch the PBS National Parks series? Is it airing this week, next week? Give us some guidance.
Sure. There's two ways. One is you can stream it at pbs.org. And it will be broadcast over all PBS stations. It's every Thursday night for 6 weeks. You missed episode one, so you're going to have to stream that. But this Thursday, episode two will be broadcast and so forth on successive Thursdays. So I hope people tune in or whatever you call it when you're streaming.
All right. Well, Dayton, thank you so much for calling in. And thank you, Senator Angus King and David McDonald from Friends of Acadia, for calling in for this hour as well. Our conversation about the Great American Outdoors Act just passed by the U.S. Senate at about 12:30 today, right after noon. Senator King, you're saying it needs to go to Congress, but that the president to the House, but that the president has promised he will sign it. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Stay tuned for today's CDC briefing with Director Nirav Shah. That's on television and on the website as well. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.